Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, hope you've recovered from Super Bowl Sunday, and hope that you were happy with the outcome of the game. Well, coming up today, we're going to hear Florida This Week, which is a discussion about state and local politics. And on this program, which is recorded on Friday, we discuss the upcoming Super Bowl game. So you can listen to John Romano of the Tampa Bay Times and what he got right and wrong. It'll be interesting to listen back to what John said on Friday before the big game. And then later on in this hour, we'll open up the phone lines and talk about some other issues in the news. But first, Florida This Week from the PBS station WEDU-TV here in Tampa. Coming up next, Tampa hosts an historic Super Bowl. The governor compares big tech to Big Brother when it comes to blocking some social media content. Are corporations backing away from politicians who hold extreme views? And black leaders call for more vaccines to be available in their communities. Our guests are Bishop Thomas Scott, a former Hillsborough County Commissioner, Steve Contorno, the political editor at the Tampa Bay Times, Ciara Torres-Spellacy, professor of law at Stetson University College of Law, and John Romano, sports columnist at the Tampa Bay Times. Next on Florida This Week. Welcome back. For the fifth time, Tampa's hosting a Super Bowl, and it's happening against a background like no other. Only Miami, New Orleans, and Los Angeles have hosted more. For the first time in the 55-year history of the championship, it's being held in the home city of one of the competing teams. Even the officiating on the field will be historic, with the first woman ever, Sarah Thomas, acting as a referee. It's set against a background of tension in the country, still deeply divided over the election and the assault on the U.S. Capitol. And then there's coronavirus, which is on track to kill a half million Americans. Vaccinations have given us some hope, but they're not yet widely available, and the distribution is uneven across the state. Florida's grocery stores were in the news this week. In one case, a reporter found that in a Naples store, neither customers nor staff were wearing masks, even though Collier County has a requirement that masks be worn to guard against the spread of the coronavirus. And the Wall Street Journal reported last week that an heir to the public supermarket fortune paid $300,000 to cover the cost of the rally that preceded the storming of the U.S. Capitol. Former President Trump's trial on inciting the insurrection at the Capitol begins on Tuesday. A coalition of pastors this week called for a more robust response from the state of Florida in getting COVID-19 vaccinations to communities around the state, communities of color. The group is pushing officials to place vaccination sites in traditionally underserved areas. Bishop Thomas Scott is the pastor of the 34th Street Church of God in Tampa and is part of the group, and he joins us now. And Bishop, I almost called you Commissioner. Bishop Scott, welcome to Florida This Week.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
So tell me, what is the problem in the African-American community? I've seen numbers that say that blacks are being vaccinated at far lower rates than are people in the white community.
Yeah, I think when we look at the situation where we are now, one is that African-Americans are dying at a higher rate from the COVID-19, four times more, according to the national average, okay? Secondly, because of disparity already in healthcare, now the problem has compounded itself. So now we are not getting the vaccination into the African American community, which on a scale on the national average, whereas African Americans at this point only got about 5%, I think it's about 5% in terms of the vaccine, considering or compared to 60%. Compared to non-Hispanic whites.
Mm-hmm. So what ideas does the pastors group have for making sure that more people in the African-American community get vaccinated?
Well, we believe that one of the ways to have access and be available to the vaccine is through the Black church. Historically, the Black church has always been a pinnacle or the establishment whereby we gather, African-American gather, and by and large represent a large portion of the African-American community. So the Black church is a key. And so the panel of African-American pastors on Tuesday had a press conference calling for the Black church to be more involved, be more engaged, and that the vaccine actually is run through the African-American community, through the Black church.
So the governor's initial plan was to use some grocery stores, especially Publix, as a way to get the vaccine out. How efficient or how well does that serve the Black community?
It does not serve it well at all, because when you look at where the Publix are located, they are not located in African American community. In fact, I don't know. I've been around a long time, serving as county commissions, city council, and all that. I do not know of any Publix in the Black community in Hillsborough County. So even though Publix is available or they have the vaccine, but yet many African Americans do not have access because Publix are not in the African American community.
Bishop, what role do experiments on African Americans in years past, like the Tuskegee experiments, what role does that play in making people fearful of perhaps taking the vaccine early? I mean, it's only been out for a couple of months. Does that play a role in people's reluctance to get the vaccine?
I think that may play a role in that. There's always apprehension about anything of this nature coming out, so early. But however, I think it's one of education. I think you got to educate the community regarding it. I think it got to be available and accessible. And then, we're having problems. Even myself, I would like to think I'm kind of astute when it comes to dialing into to make an appointment or to get online on the computer. But I was not able to do that. And so I think that that may have a small portion in terms of the Tuskegee experiment. But I think the larger issue is the education component and accessibility to the vaccine.
And in addition to enrolling churches and getting them involved in the distribution of vaccine, are there any other things that you think the state government should be doing to make sure that more people get access to the vaccines?
Yeah, I think it's important that we partner. I think it's important that we partner with the state, federal government. This panel that we'll be having another hearing on the 10th of February, another meeting on the 10th of February, and we'll be talking to the White House. How it's important to engage the Black church, the Black community through the Black church. So one is being able to have vaccines available in the Black church so that we can get the people in the community so they can get the vaccine or get the vaccination. I think that's going to be critical and very important.
Well, Bishop Thomas Scott, great to see you. Thanks for coming on Florida This Week.
Well, thank you for having me, and my pleasure.
Go Bucks.
Go Bucks.
Governor Ron DeSantis this week proposed a bill to penalize social media companies for blocking politicians, even if those politicians incite violence.
If they engage in wrongthink or they go to the wrong political event, then all of a sudden they can act in concert and just take you off. You need to have protection against that.
Chara Torres-Spellacy is a professor at Stetson University College of Law. She teaches constitutional law and the First Amendment, and she's an author and a fellow at the Brennan Center. Professor, thanks for joining us. Great to see you.
Thanks for having me back.
I think the governor is characterizing what the social media companies are doing, and I think a lot of conservatives feel this way, that they're being censored by social media. Is that the way you see what's happening?
It is not, in part because I look at this through the lens of the First Amendment. The First Amendment protects private individuals and private companies from the government, not the other way around. So Facebook and Twitter have the constitutional right to edit what is found on their platforms, including deplatforming individuals.
But shouldn't the social media companies just accept everything out there, just like the telephone company does, and just say, okay, we're the telephone company and we're providing the service and everybody can transmit over our service?
No, they are not treated exactly like a common carrier. So if the law treated them precisely like a common carrier, then you would be right that they would have to take every person who wants to be on Facebook or every person who wants to be on Twitter, then those platforms would have to accept that. I think the analysis that courts are coming to is that Twitter and Facebook are more akin to a newspaper. And with a newspaper, the editor of the newspaper gets to edit content. You don't have a right to have your op-ed or your letter to the editor published. Ultimately, it's the choice of that private publisher who decides whether certain content comes onto that platform. And similarly, Facebook, if it wants to deplatform you, or Twitter, if it wants to deplatform you because you've been saying things that are dangerous or incendiary, they can edit that in a way that the government cannot. And so I think the proposals from the Florida legislature and from the Florida governor are problematic because the First Amendment surely applies to them, and they can't censor Facebook and Twitter.
And you think that's what they're doing by requiring Facebook and Twitter to accept content that they normally would not? Or tell us what you mean by that.
So there's a doctrine in First Amendment jurisprudence called the compelled speech doctrine. And this allows individuals to remain silent if that's the message that they would like to convey. And the Supreme Court has upheld this in several cases, from Jehovah's Witness children who didn't want to say the Pledge of Allegiance because that was against their religion. The court sided with the children. There was a man in New Hampshire who didn't want "Live Free or Die" on his license plate, and the Supreme Court sided with him over the state of New Hampshire. And more recently, there was a fight over the St. Patrick's Day parade in Boston. This was several years back, but at the time, they wouldn't let gay members of the community march in the parade. And that was litigated to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said the organizers of the parade have a right to remain silent. If they don't want a gay message in their parade, they don't have to have a gay message in their parade, because there's a speech right for the people who organize the parade. Now, Boston can't discriminate between the gay pride parade and the St. Patrick's Day parade, but the St. Patrick's Day parade organizers can discriminate because they are a private entity.
And in this case, Twitter and Facebook are private entities, and they have the right to remain silent.
They do. So if they don't want to carry a certain type of political speech, or really any type of speech, they can silence that speech. And I'm not saying that it's not frightening that a few concentrated corporations have the ability to deplatform the president, which is what happened a couple of weeks ago to former President Trump. That is sort of a crazy amount of power for a few corporations to have, but it's a power that they have pursuant to the Constitution and to the First Amendment.
Do you know of cases? I mean, the social media companies are saying, we are not banning speech because of the content, if it's simply calling for a tax decrease. We're banning speech because somebody's saying the election was stolen, or they're showing images of violence or potential violence. So that's what they say. But do you know if people are actually being barred from Facebook or Twitter because they simply have a conservative message?
That I don't work for either of these companies, and so I can't speak to what's being deplatformed unless it's been reported in the press. So obviously, the president was deplatformed, and it was a huge change because he had so many followers on Twitter, for example, and he was sort of a constant source of information and some might say disinformation during the election season. And I think once we got to the insurrection in January 6th, that's when Twitter had finally had enough. And they decided, that's it. You're off of our platform. You have been spreading misinformation and encouraging, I think in Twitter's mind, violence, which is not acceptable.
All right. Well, Professor Torres-Pellissi, thanks a lot for coming on Florida This Week. Nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the violence in Washington, D.C. caused some companies to think twice before giving donations to lawmakers who voted against certifying Joe Biden's electoral victory, but others didn't pause in their contributions. Steve Contorno is the political editor at the Tampa Bay Times. In addition to reporting, he also writes The Buzz on Florida Politics. He joins us now. Hey, Steve, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thanks, Rob.
So Florida does have a lot of politicians who didn't think that Donald Trump lost the election, in some cases voted not to certify in Washington. And, you know, even in Florida, we've got the attorney general and others that dismissed the November election results. Are corporations still giving to those politicians in the wake of the insurrection at the Capitol?
So dozens of corporations have said that they are rethinking their contributions as a result of what happened on January 6th. The question is how far-reaching their new policies will be and whether it will extend to Florida politicians. We have, like you said, Ashley Moody, who supported the lawsuit to overturn the election. We have the governor, who was among the first to suggest that legislatures should overturn the results of the election. We have Senator Gruters, who is the head of the Republican Party of Florida, who is tweeting "Stop the Steal." And the question is, will these acts be construed by these companies as being part of, the lead up and the rhetoric that influenced this insurrection? And right now, we don't know the answer to it, but it would be significant if they pulled back. We did an analysis that showed that the companies who have so far announced some sort of change in their policy have donated $79 million to Florida campaigns and candidates over the last decade. These are big corporations with large influence in Florida, such as Disney, Duke Energy, Comcast, AT&T, Walmart. So if they were to change their policy going forward, it would be significant. But a lot of them have said that they're specifically focusing on the lawmakers who voted to decertify the election. Others have said, like Duke Energy, that their policy change for now only applies to federal election donations, while others like Microsoft has said that they're doing a wholesale reevaluation and, it potentially could affect Florida state level politicians going forward.
So I guess we'll have to wait and see how much they pull back, how long that pause is. I want to ask you another question. That is, there was all this talk this week that Congressman Charlie Crist, the former Republican governor, now a Democratic congressman from Pinellas County, is open to the idea of running for governor again. What can you tell us about this?
This is a rumor that I've heard percolating in the background for a couple months now. And, the Democrats are looking for someone who could take on Ron DeSantis. And I think there are some people who are trying to convince Charlie, or he's trying to convince maybe, that he can be sort of a Joe Biden-like candidate in Florida, someone who is middle of the road, familiar face, who can take on someone who is, very close in policy and personal to Donald Trump. Now, there are also people who are saying it's time for the party to look for new faces. And, while Charlie may be considering getting back into the game, there's a whole bunch of other candidates who are also weighing whether or not to run. And I think you're going to see a lot of the same arguments that we saw during the Democratic primary, where people are saying it's time for some new blood or a more progressive voice or someone who can unite the left and the middle of the party. But it'll be interesting to see if Charlie does get into the race. He certainly sounds like he's entertaining the idea.
It's interesting that you link him up with President Biden. One last question. Chris just went through a re-election, and he won, but he won narrowly. Now we've got the redistricting coming up in Tallahassee. What's likely to happen to Charlie Crist's congressional seat in terms of the Democratic-Republican breakdown?
Well, if you remember, that seat was the one that became basically the poster child for the redistricting lawsuit, because the way that Republicans drew it the last time there was the redistricting process is that it jumped the bay, and that was seen as an example of, you know, a district that was did not meet the constitutional standards that have been set. But it's a whole new Supreme Court with a much more conservative Supreme Court that's been shaped by DeSantis. Republicans are still in charge of that process in Tallahassee. So it'll be interesting to see if they are, you know, find ways to make that district more conservative. But we also have, you know, right to the north of the district is Gus Bilirakis's seat. And, you know, that's a district that he's been successful in because, you know, he's well known in that area. But it's that area is also becoming larger and, you know, is picking up some of the blue growth that we're seeing in St. Pete and other parts of Pinellas. So they might choose to shore up that district and leave, you know, the St. Pete seat as more of a bluer seat going forward.
Well, Steve, thanks for coming back on the show. It's nice to have you here.
Thanks as always, Rob.
The Super Bowl is this Sunday, and the hometown Tampa Bay Buccaneers are in the game. It comes in a year when all of Tampa Bay's major league sports teams have competed for championships. John Romano is a sports columnist for the Tampa Bay Times and has been covering the teams in this rare year for success. Welcome back, John. Great to see you.
Good to see you, Rob.
So how rare is it for three teams in a city to make the championship in a single season?
Well, it's incredibly rare nationally, and especially in this situation where you're talking about the Tampa Bay market is a mid-market in terms of sports franchises. If you have a New York, a Boston, a Los Angeles, there are occasional years where they'll have two, maybe even three teams playing for championships. For a team like or an area like Tampa Bay to do it, it's remarkably rare. This is an area where these three teams hadn't even made the playoffs in the same season before this year. And now we have all three of them playing for championships in a span of about 5 months.
So do you believe that defense wins games like this, wins the Super Bowl?
Well, defense, that used to be the buzz phrase for years and years and years. The NFL over the past decade has become much more of an offensive league. It's actually funny, of the final four teams in the NFL playoffs this year, the Bucs were the only one that had a top 10 defense. So now it's how many points can you put on the board? But I think you're onto something there, because I think Tampa Bay's defense, Bruce Arians, their coach, has been saying it all year that they've been winning with defense. Even though they give up a lot of points a game, it's still not as much as what you're seeing around the rest of the NFL.
And back in the middle of the season, when the Bucs were 7-5, this didn't look possible, did it?
No, they got off to a slow start, and it was somewhat explainable because obviously everybody knows Tom Brady came here this year, and with the pandemic, they didn't have a normal training camp, off-season camp. They didn't have any kind of preseason, so it just took a little while for Brady to get together with the receivers, to totally understand the offense that Bruce Arians wanted to run. And I think once they got deep into the season, they got a bye week early in December, which gave them a little more time to work. After that bye week, they came out like gangbusters and haven't lost since.
So earlier this week, you predicted Kansas City would win. Are you standing by that?
I in my heart, when I made that prediction in print, I thought Kansas City would win. But as this week has gone on, I've become more and more convinced listening to the Tampa Bay players that they have a legitimate shot at winning this thing.
You know,
I wouldn't make a very good gambler, would I? I just keep going back and forth.
Well, you have to bet on both sides. So sports has this ability, at least when I think when I was growing up, when you were growing up, it had this ability to bring the country together. I think we all watched the Olympics. We watched the World Series. Super Bowl parties go back 55 or 54 years. So what about this year? I mean, this year there's so much tension in the country. Do you think that, you know, having the oldest quarterback ever to compete, or is he the oldest quarterback ever to compete? Do you think that there's a chance that this game can reduce some of that tension that's in the country?
Well, I think that's the romantic notion of sports, that it somehow gives us all something to have a rooting interest for. And I do think it's been, you know, sort of a double-edged sword here in Tampa Bay, that we've had this greatest season ever of success for the three major league sports franchises. And it's come in a year when we weren't able to attend many of the games. The Rays World Series games were played in Texas. The Lightning Stanley Cup playoffs was the entire playoffs was done in Canada. So from that sense, it's been sort of sad for Tampa Bay not to be able to participate the way we would like to. But I do think it has given the market something to root for. It's given us a distraction. It's given us reasons to communicate again for a lot of people who are, you know, stuck at home and not going to school or work like they normally do. So I do think it's been a huge way to bond, if not a way to heal, over the past year.
John, it's great to see you, and I'll be glued to my TV on Sunday evening. Great to see you.
You too, Rob. Take care.
Well, that was John Romano on Florida This Week from this past Friday night. So that was before the game, and before we knew that defense did win the game for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. John, who said last week that he thought, well, maybe Kansas City's going to win. And then, as you heard on that program on Friday, was changing his mind and thought the Buccaneers had a better and better chance. My other guest on that program, besides John Romano of the Tampa Bay Times, Steve Contorno, who's the chief political writer at the Tampa Bay Times, was also on that program. And Chara Torres-Spellacy, a professor of law at Stetson University College of Law in Gulfport, was also there. And Reverend Thomas Scott, former Hillsborough County Commissioner, was on that program. And if you want to comment about anything you've heard there, you can email us here in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org, or you can call us at 813-239-9663. Here's the topic. One of our emailers wants to talk about the topic of censorship and social media, and I think there's going to be more and more discussions here on MNF and in media all across the land about whether social media companies that bar people from lying about the outcome of the election or promoting violence, whether or not that's censorship or whether or not that is a responsible policy of social media companies. Ernie writes this: your guest, the professor, referred to the rights of publishers to print or not. Does that mean that social media platforms should be considered publishers? They have continually resisted this. I wish you'd ask her. Well, I think the professor kind of leans toward describing social media more as publishers and less as common carriers. Common carriers are telephone companies, for instance. You can get on your telephone and say whatever you want. But I think the professor is leaning toward thinking that the social media companies are more publishers. I think this is all going to be debated and then hopefully fleshed out. And censorship clearly is not the word, because censorship is something that government does to private individuals. A corporation, at least according to our current Supreme Court, is like a person. So persons are allowed to do whatever they want. Ernie, thank you for that. And I know that on this station and media around the country, we're going to be talking more and more about social media and what it should and shouldn't be doing. David writes this: I like the idea of Charlie Crist running for governor again as a Democrat. He was a pretty decent governor as a Republican. I think that enough Republicans who hate Trump and Ron DeSantis would vote for Charlie, and that would help him, writes David, talking about the thinking that Charlie Crist may run for governor next year. Jeff writes this: I have heard this notion that Trump and other conservatives have been restricted on social media. Recently, I've seen that this trend of being restricted on social media also is being extended to progressive voices. I would rather social media be open to all. The only things that should be restricted are things that are clearly stating something violent. I understand that it is the right of social media companies to do whatever they want. Social media companies right now not only bar violence, but they also bar child pornography, which I think is a good thing. But once you open the doors to that and letting them do that, then there may be other things, other standards that they want to promote. And I know I will probably on this show and probably a lot of shows here on WMNF will be inviting legal scholars on to talk about what is a social media company? Is it simply like a newspaper that it's a publisher? And if it publishes something wrong and it knows it's wrong and it does it with some sort of malice or intent to harm, then maybe that social media company should be sued. Or is it like a telephone company? That is that anybody can say whatever they want into their phone to their friends that they call, and the telephone company doesn't bar you from saying it. We're going to open up the phone lines in a second. I just want to mention, you know, yesterday, this is how the New York Times put it. I was tempted to do this myself, but certainly was not going to go out in a crowd without a mask. But I was tempted to go out and kind of celebrate the winning of the Super Bowl. New York Times, a big story. In Tampa, Super Bowl celebrations bring super spreader concerns. Writer is Neil Vigdor, and he writes, how does a city host a Super Bowl in a pandemic? The streets of Tampa, Florida, teemed with boozy revelers in the wee hours of Monday today. Many of them ignoring pleas by medical experts to social distance and wear masks after the Buccaneers crushed the Kansas City Chiefs in Sunday's Super Bowl. So that's in the New York Times portraying us as a city that doesn't really care about the pandemic. Let's take a few phone calls, and I got a couple more things I want to talk about. Let's go to Art in Largo. Hey, Art, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, Rob. Rob, last Friday, the International Criminal Court, ICC, at The Hague in the Netherlands, announced that after its preliminary investigations, it will start proceedings against the State of Israel for war crimes in Gaza, West Bank, and Jerusalem. The court stated that its proceedings are legal because Palestine is a signatory to the Rome Statute, which it signed in January of 2015. Now, for more information on this statute, you can Google Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court and go to page 4 for the table of contents. Now, last Saturday, the organization ifamericansknew.org sent out the news about the ICC investigation of Israel with comments from the ICC and its detractors. Today, Monday, is the first time that I heard about the ICC and Israel with Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! I wonder how many of your listeners have heard of the ICC action over the weekend. How does one explain the silence of the media without being labeled with the political definition of anti-Semitism, of which Netanyahu quickly labeled the International Criminal Court? Let's wait and see when the Tampa Bay Times will mention it with its impartial reporting. Rob, have you heard about the ICC action?
Well, I did hear. I wasn't able to listen to Amy Goodman's entire show, but I did hear her mention it at the top of the show and then do the interview. So I'm going to have to go back and listen to it at 5 o'clock when we carry it on our HD3 channel.
So that was the first time you heard about it?
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, Art, I got to say, I see hundreds, if not thousands, of news stories every day. And I do. There was a big story a few weeks ago, I think, that was entirely disregarded or not talked about. And that is that there's a lot of peace groups in Israel. There's a lot anti-war and peace groups and pro-human rights groups.
Right.
Some that just contain Israeli citizens, some contain amalgams of Arabs and Israelis. Right. And B'Tselem, which is one of the major peace groups in Israel, issued a report outlining what it described as pretty horrific human rights abuses in Israel. And, you know, I think you could... Some people might challenge some human rights reporting, but B'Tselem is largely an Israeli group, and it's people it's people who have a social conscience in Israel. And,
yeah, well, I mentioned this, Rob, because it's the first time that that they said they were going to initiate the proceedings. Before, they had the preliminary hearings, you know, and the preliminary hearings agreed with the court, and so that's why the court initiated the proceedings just...
But Arthur, there still has to be a trial, right? I mean, is...
Yeah.
So we'll find out. I mean, you know, I'm sure Amy Goodman will pay attention to it. We'll pay attention to it and report it as needed. Art, thanks a lot.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Mike in Brandon. Hey, Mike, you're on M&F. What's up?
Hey, Rob. I got to be honest with you. I completely forgot what the hell I wanted to talk to you about. With that being the case, congratulations to the Buccaneers. And once again, they prove the old adage, defense wins championships. And boy, oh boy, did they do a hell of a job last night.
Yeah, it was good.
And I'm very proud of them.
So, Mike, were you up too late last night? Is that why you forgot what you were calling in about?
No, actually, it was the call. I'm in the middle of all types of projects at this home. I'm remodeling a 1965 home, and you were talking to the gentleman about Israel, and I got to be honest with you, I had something I really wanted to discuss, and it is gone. It's off the slate. That's, you know, that's the problem being 53. One minute's there, and one minute's gone.
Okay, well, you work hard for a living. I'm sure it's going to come back. Hard work keeps your mind sharp, so.
Yeah, it's all good, but I was disappointed in the Super Bowl in the sense that it was a crappy game. I mean, you want to see a good game, but, you know, defense wins, and Buccaneers, they did what they needed to do. And you know what? It's good for our community. And at the end of the day, I was listening to some sports talk radio last night, and there were people literally crying. I've never cried over a game, but they were, and it was pure, you know, people lost family members. And one gentleman basically said, you know, the beauty of this is just for a brief moment, you can forget about your personal problems. You can be proud of your community. You can be proud of, you know, people who at the pinnacle of their abilities are able to, you know, do an accomplishment. And it really touched me. It was, you know, the game is the game, you know, but to hear how it affected people and, you know, how they go forth, it's nice. And congratulations, Tampa Bay, and, you know, good luck defending it next year.
Yeah. All right, Mike, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Have a wonderful
All
day,
right.
Rob.
You
thanks
too.
For giving me the time.
All right, thank
Bye-bye.
You. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. And here's somebody that wants to be remain anonymous. Normally, I wouldn't read an anonymous email, but she did sign her name. So I'm just going to allow her to be anonymous for this reason, because she was at the Super Bowl. And this is what she writes. I volunteered at the Super Bowl experience this and last weekend. There were supposed to be fan safety managers that reminded and warned people to keep their masks on above their nose and maintain social distancing in the lines and such. I had a lot of faith in the safety idea, but sad to say, after witnessing it firsthand, so many people didn't properly wear their masks. Just watching the local news before and after the game, you could see that so many people were in close contact without taking safety precautions. I am nervous about it all, writes Anonymous. Thank you, Anonymous, for that. You know, caller Mike just talked about, you know, for a moment, we can kind of forget about things. I asked John Romano whether or not Super Bowls can bring people together. It's hard if you're a Kansas City fan, but for the Tampa people, I live in a neighborhood that where people had Trump signs up and Biden signs up, and I noticed that the guy who had the biggest Trump display in my neighborhood this morning and yesterday had this giant Go Buccaneers display out too. And sometimes, you know, I've got conservative friends that no longer watch the NFL. But this guy, who is a Trump supporter just around the block from me as I was walking the dog this morning, was really, you know, he was all in for the Bucks. And I thought that was good. It does bring people together. You know, it is kind of manipulative. You know, you had the healthcare workers go there to the Super Bowl yesterday. About 7,000 got free tickets, and that was great. There was lots of displays of, I think, of patriotism, of raising people's consciousness about the experience of African Americans. Some great songs were sung yesterday. It was a pretty diverse group of entertainers at the start of the event. And, of course, there were, you know, the ads trying to sell you something. But there was one ad, I think, that really broke through. There were two or three ads I liked. I liked the electric car ad. This ad really broke through. And I don't know if did it affect you the way it affected me. It's narrated by Bruce Springsteen. It's for a car company. I'm not going to even name the car company. The car company doesn't even come up in the context of the commercial that we're about to hear. But listening to Bruce Springsteen during this ad, I really felt like here's an attempt to bring our country together. Here it is. Here's the ad from the Super Bowl yesterday that affected me the most.
There's a chapel in Kansas, standing on the exact center of the lower 48. It never closes. All are more than welcome to come meet here in the middle. It's no secret. The middle has been a hard place to get to lately. Between red and blue, between servant and citizen, between our freedom and our fear. Now, fear has never been the best of who we are. And as for freedom, it's not the property of just the fortunate few. It belongs to us all. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, it's what connects us. And we need that connection. We need the middle. We just have to remember the very soil we stand on is common ground. So we can get there. We can make it to the mountaintop, through the desert, and we will cross this divide. Our light has always found its way through the darkness. And there's hope on the road up ahead.
It was an ad from yesterday's Super Bowl, the voice, Bruce Springsteen, talking about finding the middle, finding a way to bring the country together. And that ad really grabbed me yesterday as I was watching the game. What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. We've got all men on the line. It'd be great to hear from some women. And let's go to the person who's been holding the longest. It looks like it's Smitty in Plant City. Hi, Smitty. You're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Yep, pushed the wrong button, Rob. Jeff in Plant City.
Oh, this is Jeff in Plant City. All right, Jeff, you're on. What would you like to say?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, sports can be cathartic because I know I used to hate Tom Brady, but now I've got nothing but love for him. I mean, I don't know what it is. I tell you, I can't imagine the money that people spent on this because in 1979, my brother and I went and camped out at the old Big Sombrero for tickets to the 1979 NFC Championship game, and we got end zone tickets for $9 each.
Yeah, it's crazy what the prices are now, yeah.
But the thing that I really called about, I wanted to ask you what you thought about Mr. Netanyahu coming to court and then saying thank you very much, and it's a travesty, and it's a witch hunt. And walked out. You know, I was wondering, is he following the Trump standard playbook here? Or?
Yeah, you know, I haven't read the story. I saw the headline on my phone as I was driving in this morning. I don't know enough about it. We do know that Netanyahu is very close to Trump, and has gotten advice from people within President Trump's camp, but I don't know enough about it. So,
well, it seems like that they're all, you know, it's kind of like, and I you know, this may get me into trouble, but it seems like if you say something against Israel, people like to say you're anti-Semitic, you know, whether you are or not, and that's a reactionary type response, but he is saying that all these charges against him are just all trumped up, you know, meant to disrupt his political campaign, and you know, it just sounds like the standard excuse. In fact, the saying that I always loved is, don't believe anything you hear until you hear the official denial.
All right, Jeff, I'm sure programs like Amy Goodman are going to be paying attention to it, and we'll see what happens. I don't know enough about it to really comment.
Stay buck.
All right. Thanks, Jeff, in Plant City. Thank you. Well, we've got an open line, 813-239-9663. And let's go to Jim in Spring Hill. Hey, Jim, you're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Yeah, Rob, I heard you talking earlier on This Week in Florida about Publix giving the vaccination. And up here in Hernando County, I've been trying to get one ever since they started vaccinating people 65 and over. And on the Publix, the only way you can get on is online. And they have like 1 or 2 days a week. You got to be up at 6 a.m. to go online. And they just tell you to stay connected. They don't give you any rhyme or reason of how they're picking who gets the vaccinations. And you stay on there for about a half hour, and then they say the appointments are all taken up.
Yeah, let's just say that the system is really screwed up.
It sure
let's
is.
Let's just say that. Okay.
And there's a lot of older folks that don't have internet.
I think that's a huge problem. And Jim, I'm not going to cut you off, but I talked to a grandmother the other day, a woman who's got a bunch of kids, and she's almost 70 years old, and she was on hold for like an hour or two, and then she just gave up. Yeah. Because of the system, and she's, you know, she's pretty healthy. But if you're maybe you're infirm and you're 75 or 80 or 85, and they make you go through this, it just seems unreasonable.
Yeah, another problem up here. We have one choice of internet carriers, and my Wi-Fi is $100 a week just for $100 a month just for basic service. And there's a whole lot of people that can't afford that. I know, especially us older folks.
Yeah, there's got to be a better way. There has to be a better way, and I hope the governor will come out in the next day or two and say, look, we've got to fix it.
Yeah, I sure hope so, because like I said, my wife has asthma, and she definitely needs to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
And it's just almost impossible to do up here.
Yeah. Well, Jim, thanks.
I just want to put my 2 cents in.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for the phone call. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
All right. And let's take some more phone calls. I asked for a woman to call. Let's go to Fran in Largo. Hey, Fran, thank you for calling.
Oh, thanks,
Rob. Nice to hear your voice.
Oh, yeah. I just want to add to what he just said about having to register online and all of that stuff. I don't have a computer, and neither do a lot of other people. They say black people, Latino people are not able to get the vaccine. And I don't think it's right. I remember when I was a child and my sister, we both got polio shots. I never remember my mother having to jump through any hoops to get them. She just took us to the doctor. Same way with in the 70s, I think, when there was some swine flu epidemic, people were able to go to the Bayfront Center, when it was the Bayfront Center, I guess, and get the flu shots. Again, no jumping through hoops. You know, you just had to prove, I guess, you were a resident. I don't know what you had to do, but it was very simple. Why do they have to add this computer business?
Yeah, I agree, why? Fran. I agree. And the governor really should fix it. Fran, thanks a lot.
I don't hold my breath over anything that DeSantis is going to do, though, Rob.
All right. Thanks, Fran. Okay. You know, and just to echo what Fran said, I think it was 1966. My mom and dad packed all of us into the station wagon and drove about 2 miles down to the local public elementary school. And it was a Sunday afternoon, and we stood in line, and we got this little sugar cube that had the polio vaccine in it. And we ate the sugar cube, and we didn't have to call up ahead of time. We didn't have to use our computers. Of course, they didn't exist back then. But that's how we got it. And every elementary school in the city was the distribution point for the polio vaccine when it finally became available. So I think that's probably the way it should go, right? Let's take some more phone calls, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Frank in Sarasota. Hey, Frank, you're on M&F.
Hi, Rob. I'm old enough, that's the way I got it, too. Actually, I got two polio vaccines. One of them was the shot, the vaccination, and then later on, about a year later, they gave us the sugar cube.
Mm-hmm.
One of many sugar cubes.
Yeah.
And so I was going to say that I heard that ad Bruce Springsteen had last night on the Super Bowl. I thought it was a pretty good ad, although I thought, you know, maybe it was a little disingenuous, as, you know, a guy who grew up on the East Coast on the boardwalk or whatever, parading around in cowboy boots and driving a Jeep. Oops, sorry. Anyway, with a cowboy hat and all that sort of stuff. But it was a good message. So I just want to say that Glenn Beck spent the first 30 minutes of his show this morning eviscerating it, you know, saying how we never came together behind Trump and all this other stuff.
What did Beck say? I don't listen to Beck, but what did he say?
Oh, I do. I feel like I need to listen to everything. You know?
Yeah, why did he eviscerate the ad? I'm sorry.
He just said, I thought it was disingenuous that we never became, you know, we never unified behind any of Trump's policies or anything like that, you know, and it's only now that they expect us to unify and all this other sort of thing. It's just
But you know, I think to Springsteen's credit, there was no politics in the ad.
Nothing.
I mean, it was just saying, hey, look, you know, let's bring the country together. But he wasn't advocating for Biden. He wasn't advocating for Democrats.
According to Glenn Beck, there was a lot of politics in that ad.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I must have missed it. Maybe Glenn gets a different cable company than I get, or a different version of
it. It was on the radio. It was on, you know, 970.
You know, Frank, that's BS. I mean, let's just call it what it is.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Bull Trump.
Okay. Frank, thanks a lot. Thanks for being our Glenn Beck spy. And the check's in the mail. Greg writes, just saw TV, the doctors suggesting taking ivermectin for COVID. Please don't take ivermectin. It's a dog heartworm medication. Yeah, we had our own doctor talk about it, and it is, if you take the wrong amount, it's dangerous, right? Our own doctor says that. Anonymous writes, it would be great to get a healthcare worker who was at Super Bowl and get their take on the COVID safety in the crowd at Ray J yesterday. Yeah, that would be a really good idea. Doug writes, from Clearwater, the Springsteen ad was one of the few I saw, and it touched me as well. It seemed very much like it was designed to reach out to everyone, writes Doug in Clearwater. Let's go to Marie, who's in Seminole. Hi, Marie. You're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Hi, good morning, Rob. This is Marianne, and I'm joining the crowd complaining about vaccine appointments. I was on the call, waited a long time, and supposed to be in line. They took my name and said, you're going to be in line for the vaccine, never was called. So I've been on the internet many times, getting up at 6 o'clock and trying, and then I see all the appointments being given, and then it says, system full. So I'm very frustrated.
Really? How many times have you tried, Marianne?
On the internet?
Yeah.
Oh, about 5 times. I'm going to try again at 2 o'clock today, but it's for an appointment way, way north of me, so I don't know. We'll see. I've tried the Publix. I've tried the regular Florida website. I don't know. I don't know what people do when they don't have a computer, so anyway, thanks so much.
Okay, thanks, Marianne. Thank you, and good luck, too. I know it's frustrating. It's got to be really frustrating.
Bye.
Yeah. All right, Kevin writes this, Bruce Arians, the coach, has the most diverse staff in the history of the NFL, from the black coordinators to the women on his staff. He is a progressive coach, and we're lucky to have him, writes Kevin. Kevin, thanks. I hadn't thought about it that way. Thank you, Kevin. Let's go to Rob in Thanota, Sassa. Hi, Rob. You're on.
Hey, Rob. You know, when I was younger, I used to always, I have a lot of friends who are kind of cynical about sports. Hey, well, it's just a franchise. This is a big business, and, you know, why do you care about it? Well, I chose to care about it when I was younger, even though, of course, I know that it is big business. And I do think that football and things, you know, they bring us together. Maybe that's the problem now. Everything is so fragmented because everyone has their own little niche they go to in social media, where it used to be everyone, you know, kind of had television shows and sporting events and, you know, things that they could all agree on. And everybody kind of liked baseball and everybody liked football, you know. So, yeah, I was excited to see the Buccaneers win. I thought it was fantastic. And even though I know it's a big business and a franchise, when you see people be excellent at what they do, that's always amazing. You know, it really is. When you see people at the height of their powers, people who have trained all their lives, do what they do.
Yeah, some of those running backs were like lightning yesterday. Rob, thanks a lot. We're out of time. Yeah, if you want to comment about anything you've heard here for the last hour, you can call us at 813-238-8001 and record a comment about this program on extension 115. I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Thanks for listening. This is WMNF in Tampa. Frank Knox has been our phone producer today. Stay tuned because Sean Cannan is going to have a really great program.